Hello, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Listen as travel experts Chris Newton and Jerry Fuller give advice on world destinations and discuss important travel topics that are valuable to any world traveler. Go to www.traveladviceshow.com where you can listen to this show and all previous shows, or even ask your travel questions. Now here are your hosts, Chris and Jerry.
Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. I'm Chris Newton and one of the co-hosts, and today's April 28th, 2008. And you can reach us on via email at show@traveladviceshow.com or check our website, traveladviceshow.com. And I'd like to introduce our other co-host, Jerry Fuller. How are you doing, Jerry?
Fantastic. It's a very good day, and I'm really excited to have Peter Grubb, who is president and founder of Row International. He was our guest for Algeria, and we're really excited about the topic, Ecuador. Welcome, Peter.
Yeah, hi, Jerry and Chris. Thanks. Really good to be back with you both.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah, that's great.
Well, I wanted to start out, first of all, to ask a question for all of our listeners. Can you explain exactly where Ecuador is?
Ecuador is on the northwest corner, as it were, of South America, just south of Colombia and north of Peru. And it's an amazing country in that it's about the size of the state of Colorado and yet has several very distinct ecosystems, including the Amazon basin with rivers and monkeys and pink dolphins and everything you think about in the Amazon. And then the Andean Highlands, or the Alto Plano, which is where many of the highland indigenous people like the Quechua live. And you have a number of volcanoes and peaks over 18, 19,000 feet, so it's a real mountain climber's paradise. Then you have the coastal area down on the Pacific coast with beaches and a whole set of different towns and ecosystems. And then finally, of course, the Galapagos Islands, which are about 600 miles off the coast to the west and probably the most famous aspect of Ecuador. But between those four regions, there's just a tremendous variety packed into a relatively small area.
Fabulous. Now, because of the regions that you mentioned, is there a better to go? When would you go if you wanted to experience a good variety of Ecuador?
Because it's on the equator, the seasons actually are not seasons like we think of them in terms of fall and winter, but rather it's the dry season and the rainy season, and those really differ depending on where you are. In the Amazon, the dry season is generally the winter months, November, December, January, February, and that's when we, for example, do some of our whitewater rafting programs in that area, because what we want is lower water rather than flood stage water.
Mm-hmm.
Up in the highlands, it really doesn't make that much difference. It does rain a little bit more during the winter months than it might, say, during the summer, but temperatures don't change that much. And then when you get out to the Galapagos, the seasons there, such as they are really caused by the ocean currents as opposed to anything else. And so you have your cooler water temperatures from May through August when the Humboldt Current is coming up from Antarctica. And then the water starts to warm up September, October, November, and stays warm, until May because of the Panama Current coming from the north. But even with that, the temperature swing in the seawater is still only about 10 degrees, say from maybe 60 to 65 degrees at the low end to 70 to 75 degrees at the high end. And other than that, while there are some differences in ocean conditions and whatnot, the overall weather is not hugely different.
All right. So generally, if they're going to be a first-timer, maybe November through February, March would be the preferred time, you think?
Yeah, that seems to be the time when a lot of people, especially from North America, want to go, and I think it has as much to do with the fact that that's when it's cold and miserable in a lot of our country. And
I know,
so people like to get away. You know, certainly from the northern states, that's the time to get away, unless you're a skier. But I wouldn't discourage people from going in the summer months if that works better because of school holidays or for people that are teachers and that kind of thing, because the summer is still just lovely.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Can we spend just a minute on what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about what to do there. Now, I know you talked about the regions. We have a program on the Galapagos, so let's spend most of our time on the mainland part, if we could, because of the time but of the uniqueness. We've already talked about the three major areas, which is the highlands and the Amazon basin and the beaches. But we need to spend some time on those. But I want to introduce, if you're going to go the first time, what itinerary, excluding the Galapagos, on the mainland, would you recommend doing, and how long would you stay?
Well, what I would probably do is start off in Quito, which is the capital city, and most flights go there anyway, so it makes sense to start there. Quito is at about 9,100 feet above sea level, so you have to make sure to drink a lot of water and breathe deeply so you don't get a headache from the altitude. But it's a beautiful city. It has a modern section. It has a colonial area. In the last two or three years, there's been several new accommodation options in the old colonial city, and that makes it nice in terms of the ability to stay there. But there's a wide range of places to stay, from inexpensive hostels to very fancy hotels. So I would probably start there, and Quito, in my opinion, two or three days is plenty. It's got some good museums, it's got some nice markets, but it's still a big city, and there's lots of other parts of Ecuador to see. Traveling within Ecuador is slow if you go by land, and you can circumvent that by flying, which isn't so expensive and does allow you to get to some other areas. If a person was going to go into the Amazon, there's a couple of ways to do it. You can go by land. Many people like going to a town called Baños, which is south and east of Quito, several hours, and it's easy to get there by bus. And it's kind of a backpacker's town. It's got a lot of wonderful outdoor activities to do, and it's in a fairly dramatic river gorge. There's some hot springs as well. So Baños is a place that some people enjoy, and from there you can continue by dirt road down past some other towns like Shell and Puyo, and on eventually even to a town called Macas, which is right on the edge of the Shuar territory, which is one of the bigger indigenous tribes. You can also fly to Macas in about 45 minutes and for under $100 one way. So another idea would be to go overland the way I just described, and then after Macas maybe fly back to Quito so that you don't repeat that long trip. That would be one potential idea. Another would be to go south along the Pan-American Highway between Quito and a city called Cuenca, which is a lovely colonial town in the south of the country, not the extreme south, but it's the largest town in the south. And again, you can fly there in under an hour, or you could go one way overland. You go through a number of interesting market towns. One of the things that's important when you're thinking about a trip to Ecuador is thinking about the market days. Every village and city has markets on certain days of the week, and it's worth spending some time to figure that out, because they generally are sort of a highlight of a trip, not so much because you want to shop as much as to see the local culture. A lot of these markets are places where all the local people are coming in from, let's say, a 50-mile radius to sell their goods. And in some cases, that may be by truck and bus and whatnot. And in some of the more remote villages, they are still literally coming in with their gear on the backs of llamas and that kind of thing from the more remote areas. And so mapping out a trip where you're in this town on Tuesday and the next town on Wednesday and the next town on Thursday can make a lot of sense in terms of seeing the different markets.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're down in Cuenca, the one significant Inca ruin in Ecuador is a place called Inga Pirca. It's a little bit hard to get there, but there are the easy ways to take a tour out of Cuenca by bus, and that's not as dramatic as, say, Machu Picchu, but it's still quite significant and worth seeing. There's further south in the country, there's some more outlying villages and towns, and like every country, sort of the further you get away from the typical traveler destinations, the more, in a way, maybe authentic or at least less touristed areas you're going to come to. So there's places like Loja and Vilcabamba that you don't hear a lot about but would be very interesting to visit. That said, I would say not very many people go there. The other...
That's why it's so neat.
I'm sorry?
That's why it's so neat.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. The other place that, of course, is in every guidebook and people do enjoy is north of Quito, the market town of Otavalo, which has its main market day on Saturdays, and is on Saturdays not only filled with animals to sell, but also lots of weavings and clothing, and it's a place that is visited by a lot of travelers and tourists, so one has to sort of be prepared for that, but it is quite an amazing market with thousands of people and covering a number of acres. In the vicinity of Otavalo, there are also several haciendas that have been converted. These are old Spanish ranches from, say, the 18th century for the most part and 19th century that have been converted into places to stay. And these range from, oh, let's say a low of maybe $60, $70 for a double room to as much as a couple of hundred per night. But it's worth splurging on one of those, I think, for a night or two at least, just to get a sense of the old colonial lifestyle. And a lot of them have their staff dressed up in native costumes and that are still traditional, nevertheless. And that can be a real highlight of a trip. So in terms of the highlands, that sort of covers it. There's also some towns further to the north of Otavalo, Ibarra being one that's famous for its wood carvings, and so a person could spend a lot of time just in the highlands. But if you were to just come in and, say, visit maybe Quito, Cuenca, and Otavalo, and you could do all that in 4 or 5 days, that would be good. If you wanted to have the experience of the jungle without actually going into the Amazon, a pretty good alternative is to go into this area called the Mindo Cloud Forest. And there's some wonderful accommodations in that area, mostly lodges, sort of backcountry lodges. And the real focus there is bird watching. So people that are keen on that tend to go to the Mindo. It's one of the places where you can see the Cock of the Rocks, for example, among many other birds. But for people that are looking for that true Amazon experience, then the best thing to do is hop on an airplane and fly to one of the towns like Lago Agrio or Coca, and from there you can travel out to any of several lodges that are in the rainforest. And again, there's a wide variety of quality and places. Some of them are run by indigenous groups and really embody the best in sustainable travel practices, while others are more privately owned and have a different flavor, but nevertheless still offer a great experience. And if you're going to do that, because of the expense of flying there, I would recommend a minimum of 4 days and 3 nights, because it takes the better part of the first day just to get to the whatever lodge you go to. And then it takes, of course, a good chunk of the last day to get back to Quito. So 4 days, I would say, is minimum. 5 is probably even better. But at any of these places, people can have the experience of walking through the jungle, going on canoe trips on rivers, creeks, or lakes, seeing an amazing variety of wildlife, as you would expect, monkeys, 4 or 5 species, birds, of course, and it's from, you know, a few dozen to a few hundred, really, depending on how good a birder you are. Reptiles and amphibians, lagoons filled with caiman and maybe even pink dolphin, and in a few places the big giant river otter. And so when I've gone to Ecuador, and I've been a lot of times, and especially a few times with my family, the Amazon's always been a highlight of it because of the wildlife primarily.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk, one of my favorite lodges down there, and I've been there twice, the Raptic Lodge, is Capaldi.
Right.
And I'm really impressed with how they do it, and I think kind of representative of a wide variety of them. I mean, it takes forever to get there, and it's if you fly and land on that runway, which is a very wonderful experience, you have to walk the ways and times and get in a boat and go for a while. And do you want to talk about an experience, let's say a typical day, but in Kapawi, be sure to mention, have you been to Kapawi?
I have.
And talk about nothing more than the toilet. And I think that's interesting. That's a shock for the people to first a little bit on how you would do that. But give us a typical day, what you might do in one of the lodges on the Amazon.
Sure, yeah. And Kapawi is a great one. And there's another one called the Napo Wildlife Center,
right,
which is built and run under the same principle of indigenous ownership. And those are both great and places I've been to. But in either case, a typical day, it's kind of brutal, to be honest, because they, first of all, wake you up really early. Unless you specifically say you don't want to. But the assumption is if you're there, you want to see a lot of wildlife. And the way to do that, especially with birds, is to get up before the sun rises. So that means a knock on your door at about 4:30 or 5, and you stagger to breakfast in the dark and have a nice breakfast. And then while it's still dark, you start off going wherever you're going to go, which could be a walk through the forest to climb an observation tower, or it could be a paddle through a creek in the jungle to get to a particular place where the bird watching is particularly good. And the idea is to be in place as the sky starts to lighten and eventually as the sun comes over the horizon, because in those first 60 to 90 minutes of the day is by far the best cacophony of bird songs and bird activity. So it's a wonderful experience to see. And oftentimes these are also hikes maybe to what they call licks, places where there's minerals in the soil and you get an unusually high concentration of parrots and other birds coming to eat those minerals, which are necessary for their digestion. So if you do that, you're usually done by 7:30 or 8 o'clock and returning to the lodge, at which point the next activity starts, which might be, again, let's say a hike of several miles, 4 or 5 miles through the forest. And if it was that long of a hike, at that point they would probably pack a picnic lunch and you would hike and stop at some point for lunch. And the hikes are not about covering distance, but rather seeing interesting things. So they're not forced marches. They're meant to be somewhat leisurely. But in the heat and the humidity, they can still take it out of you. But on the trips I've been on, we would generally do something like that and then maybe get back to the lodge early afternoon, 2 o'clock, let's say, maybe 3 o'clock. And at that point, there's usually some downtime for a nap, which is well-deserved after getting up so early.
Yeah.
And then another excursion might start as it's starting to be dusky. So 5 o'clock, you might go down to the water to get into a canoe or go to a particular trail that's, for whatever reason, good for a night walk and head out. And as the sky is getting dark, you have an entirely different jungle open up to you. Flashlights will bring out the bright and crazy-looking eyes of insects. There will be lizards on trees or frogs under leaves, and you just see a whole bunch of different things that you don't see during the day. And all of this, of course, is optional, but if you're sort of going for the absolute maximum experience, you can certainly have three different activities and focuses in a day. And when it's all said and done, you come back to the lodge at maybe 7:30, have a quick shower, and then show up for dinner. So that would be a typical day. Mm-hmm. And one of the nice things that all of these lodges, or at least the two we're talking about here, do is in the evening, there would typically be a meeting with the group. There might be 20 or 30 or even 40 people staying at the lodge, but everybody is broken up into smaller groups, either based on when you arrive or based on sort of who is in your group. In other words, they'll try to put families together, and they might have couples in another group, et cetera. But they keep the group size down to 6-8 people, 10 maybe maximum, that you're going to do your activities with during the day. So those little groups, as you meet with your guide, will discuss what do you all want to do tomorrow and come up with some suggestions from the guide, and between the guide and the guests, come up with a plan. So each day is fairly well thought out before you have to get up at 4:30 in the morning when you can't think about it.
Nice. I know it. Sounds like a great day. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal experience, and I think everyone should include it. There's a couple of other things I'd like to talk about just for a few minutes. Some of the volcanoes. I mean, horseback riding around them and through that area, or climbing them. I know Cotopaxi. I climbed it about 15 years ago, and that's an experience of a lifetime. And so do you want to talk a little bit about some of the activities like horseback riding? Have you ever done that in any parts of Ecuador?
A little bit. I have. There's a wonderful hacienda. It's right outside of a village called Cayembe. And it's there's another one, too, called Hacienda Zuleta, which is an amazing place. It's a working ranch still of maybe 1,200 acres. It has a condor rehabilitation project. It only has 5 or 6 rooms. It's a place where you can see the village women milk the cows every morning. They have a cheese factory. And it's one of the most authentic haciendas where you can stay. Nearby, the other one I was trying to think of is called Hacienda Huachala. And that's also near Cayembe. And it's much simpler and much less expensive. But you can also arrange for horseback riding from there, either place. So I have done some horseback riding. As far as near the volcanoes, as you mentioned, Cotopaxi is the one that's probably the most well-known, largely because it's very easy to get there from Quito. Within a couple of hours' drive, you can be in the park, and it is a national park. And there are places to stay in the vicinity of the park, and you can go there and camp, and you can also do ascents to the summit, which are not technically terribly difficult. But what, of course, difficult is the altitude, which is, 18,000 feet or so. But as I mentioned early on, Ecuador has a lot of volcanoes, and people that are interested in a backcountry trek that's supported by horses, whether you ride the horses or walk, they carry the gear. There's a lot of opportunities for that sort of thing.
We can't end our program. One of the rides down there that I think is kind of neat is the Devil's Nose Train. Are you familiar with that one?
You know, I am familiar with it, and I've had groups go on it, but I haven't personally done it. But, that's a great experience, and gets you from A to B while also providing some tremendous scenery and even excitement along the way.
Oh, I know, and the switchbacks are kind of exciting. It almost reminds you of Cusco going out to Machu Picchu in the old days before they took out some of the specs. But Ecuador is a phenomenal destination, as we're discussing. Back in the top 3 best in South America. And because the top 3, in my opinion, are so different, I don't think there's really a 1, 2, or 3, because they are different. And it's just fabulous.
It really is. And the other area we might touch on is the coast. The city of Guayaquil, for many years, had kind of a uninspiring reputation. But I would
1 hour, you get it.
Yeah, but I would add that in the last couple of years, it has really transformed and is a very pleasant city to visit now. And the city has done a tremendous job of restoring an old historical district that is built up on a mountain and cliffs along the river. And so I would recommend a person spending maybe a day there if they had the time. And then going up north on the coast, there's a national park called Manchaia. And there's a place there called Isla de la Plata. And if a person doesn't have enough money to go to the Galapagos, it's an interesting place to visit because on this island you have some of the same birds, such as the blue-footed boobies and the red-footed boobies and the frigate birds, as you would on the Galapagos. So some people call it the poor man's Galapagos. It certainly doesn't have the sea lions and the land tortoises and the iguanas. Mm-hmm. But, as I say, for sort of a taste of what the Galapagos are like and the ecosystem, it's well worth a visit.
So how do you get there?
It's not too tough to get there going north from Guayaquil.
Is it of course, it's by boat, but is it scheduled boat, like four times a day or something like that?
Well, there are little tour agencies in the village that you sign up with, and they generally will go every day early in the morning. They'll leave around 8:30 in the morning, and there might be two or three different companies going out to the island on any given day with 15, 20 people in a boat. And when you get out to the island, you arrive at the National Park headquarters, such as it is. It's a small building with some restrooms, and you have it's a good long 2-hour boat ride out there, and it can be choppy. So it's if you are prone to seasickness, it's a good idea to take something ahead of time. But once you get out there, you then hike around the island for the better part of the day, say from 10 until about 3 in the afternoon, with lunch en route. And it's really quite a good experience. I just was there in October and visited that Isla de la Plata for the first time.
Oh, that sounds very neat. I like it. Well, Peter, we thank you again for coming on and talking about Ecuador.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. That was great. Very informative.
My pleasure. Time always flies with you, too.
But before we go, would you like to tell everyone how they can contact you?
Sure. If anybody's interested in contacting me, my company is Rowe Adventures, ROW Adventures.com, and you can email me directly to Peter, P-E-T-E-R, at RowAdventures.com. If you have any questions or want any other information.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to listen to other great travel advice shows with Chris and Jerry at www.traveladviceshow.com.